ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 15, Text 49. Viduro pi parityajya prabhase deham atmanah krishna veshina tachchita pitribhi swakshayam Yayao Viduropi Parityajya Prabhase Dehamatmanaha Krishna Veshena Tachchitta Pitribhi Swakshayam Yayao Viduropi Parityajya Prabhase Dehamatmanaha Krishna Veshena Tachchita Pitribhi Swakshayam Yayao. Please chant. Translation. Vidura. Vidura, the uncle of Maharaj Yudhishthir. Api, also. Parityajya, after quitting the body. Prabhase, in the place of pilgrimage at Prabhas. Deham Atmanaha, his body. Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Aveshena, being absorbed in that thought. Tat, his. Chitta, thoughts and actions. Pitribhi, along with the residents of Pitraloka. Swakshayam, his own abode. Yayao, departed. Vidura, while on pilgrimage, left his body at Prabhas because he was absorbed in thought of Krishna. He was received by the denizens of the Pritriloka planet, where he returned to his original post. Purport. The difference between the Pandavas and Vidura is that the Pandavas are eternal associates of the Lord, the personality of Godhead, whereas Vidura is one of the administrative demigods in charge of the Pritriloka planet and is known as Yamaraj. Men are afraid of Yamaraj because it is he only who awards punishment to the miscreants of the material world. But those who are devotees of the Lord have nothing to fear from him. To the devotees, he is a cordial friend, but to the non-devotees, he is fear personified. As we have already discussed, it is understood that Yamaraj was cursed by Manduka Muni to be degraded as a Shudra, and therefore Vidura was an incarnation of Yamaraj. As an eternal servitor of the Lord, he displayed his devotional activities very ardently and lived a life of a pious man, so much so that a materialistic man like Dhritarashtra also got salvation by his instruction. So, by his pious activities and the devotional service of the Lord, he was able to always remember the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus he became washed of all contamination of a Shudra-born life. At the end, he was again received by the denizens of Pritaloka and posted in his original position. The demigods are also associates of the Lord without personal touch, whereas the direct associates of the Lord are in constant personal touch with him. The Lord and his personal associates incarnate in many universes without cessation. The Lord remembers them all, whereas the associates forget due to their being very minute parts and parcels of the Lord. They are apt to forget such incidents due to being infinitesimal. This is corroborated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 5. Vidura piparityaja prabhase deham atmanaha krishna veshena tachchitta pitribhi svakshayam yayau. Vidura, while on pilgrimage, left his body at Prabhas because he was absorbed in thought of Krishna. He was received by the denizens of the Pritaloka planet, where he returned to his original post. At every chapter at the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami prays to his spiritual masters Rupa and Raghunath Das Goswami and prays for their blessings to continue to narrate Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I seek, in the same way, following in his footsteps, I seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas to speak something today. I didn't prepare anything. I found out I was going to give class this morning by the mercy of Archita Prabhu. So Vidura, even Prabhupada explains in many purports that it's ideal for a devotee to leave his body in a sacred place such as Vrindavan, Mayapur, Jagannath Puri, anywhere where the Lord performed his pastimes. We have a great saint in ISKCON, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, who didn't follow this instruction externally. And he chose to actually leave his body in Gitanagari, which is one of the ISKCON temples in the U.S. And the reason he did this was to inspire the other devotees, showing that he had total faith that anywhere where Krishna's deities and the pure devotee of Krishna has established a temple is non-different from Vrindavan. So this gives us, should give us the impetus to understand that we can always be in Vrindavan consciousness wherever we go. And Vridura, while he was on pilgrimage, he left his body at Prabhas, which is a holy place. And because he was absorbed in thought of Krishna, he didn't exactly go back to the Vaikuntha planets, but rather he resumed his post in Prithiloka, his service. He continued his service. So in the same way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us that our main goal is not to go back to Godhead. Although this is a recommended, it is a bona fide desire, and it is recommended for the less advanced devotees to go, desire to go back to Godhead. But full surrender means we don't care where we go as long as we are serving Krishna in ecstatic love. And there's a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he sings something like, he doesn't even want to go back to Godhead. He would be happy just taking birth as a bug or a dog or something like that in the house of a Vaishnav, so that he at least gets the association of Vaishnavas and he is able to take their remnants. So in the same way, gives us an inspiration how we should develop this mood of full self-surrender, of not caring, putting ourselves out of the center, taking our false ego out of the center, and putting Krishna's desires in the center. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, there's a book I've been reading. Where's that? Satchinandana Swami wrote this book and compiled it. Different songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's called the Nama Rahasyas, the Confidential Secrets of Chanting the Holy Name. And he describes, I'll read you a little couple sentences real quick. He describes that in every stage of our devotional development, we should not lose focus on the goal. And this is Satchinandana Swami saying that we must remain conscious of the goal of our spiritual practice, which is to attain prema bhakti with undivided attention. And he quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying that we must maintain this awareness from the very beginning of our spiritual journey. He says, from the very beginning of this practice, the devotee must adopt this concentrated attention, and he should be careful not to give it up because of distraction or inattention or laziness. Those who are eager to awaken their spiritual consciousness and who have unflinching, undeviating intelligence or concentration on their goal certainly attain the desired goal of life very soon. So while we're chanting the holy names, japa is giving us an opportunity every day to come in contact with Krishna. It's our personal, individual connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we can see that Srila Prabhupada instructed us to do many things, but the one thing that he made us vow to do was to chant 16 rounds of japa every day, you know, follow the four regulative principles. So we could see that chanting japa is actually our first main important priority and our main service. So that being said, in around two hours of japa every day should be with full concentration. He also explains that the impediments of chanting the holy names and engaging in pure devotional service. Where is it at? Anyways, I could remember it. He says that he gives the three A's: avidya, ignorance; anarthas, or unwanted habits; and aparads, offenses. And he says that Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that if one concentrates on avoiding offenses, automatically the other two A's will become diminished. Your ignorance, your avidya will go away, and your anarthas will automatically go away if we just do the simple thing of trying to chant the holy names without offense. And we could see that only a few of the offenses, of the 10 offenses that we recite every morning, are actually going on while we're chanting. The other ones are going on throughout the day, like not offending devotees, considering the demigods and Lord Vishnu to be on the same level, not following the instructions of the spiritual master, etc. But there's only a few that we should concentrate on while we're chanting. So it's not only during japa that we're avoiding the nama-aparadhas, but it's a daily practice of really observing your action and your consciousness and how we're treating devotees and how respectful we are to the Bhagavatam, etc. And the way we serve Bhagavatam is by studying it. Prabhupada wrote these books for us to study. And the least we, you know, he was staying up practically all night writing them. The least we could do is at least read them 1 hour a day. Yeah, this isn't so difficult. We have 24 hours in a day. Just one of those hours dedicated to reading. Okay. There's also, he also gives a meditation. I'll read this to you. He says that there, he explains that our main meditation is based on what Prabhupada has given us. And the chanting of the holy names is actually crying out. And Prabhupada said that the translation of the Maha Mantra is, "My dear Srimati Radharani, my dear Krishna, please engage me in your service." And as we purify ourselves of contamination through our sadhana bhakti practice, this translation of the Maha Mantra becomes more and more profound. It's not just the external activities we do, but we're begging to become residents of Vrindavan and engage directly in the service of Shri Shri Radha Shama Sundar. In another place, in Prabhupada's letters, he's explaining how to one devotee that the devotee actually asked first in a letter, "Prabhupada, are pictures of Krishna non-different from Krishna? And are pictures of the spiritual master non-different from the spiritual master?" And Prabhupada explained that spiritual pictures are absolute, they're transcendental, they're non-different. So there's also a memories tape. Hridayananda Goswami asked the same question of Prabhupada. "Prabhupada, are you and your picture non-different?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes. That is why my disciples make so many offenses, because they might be careless in front of a picture." But we can understand that Prabhupada is right here. He's watching everybody right now. He's listening to what I have to say. That's a picture of the Ashtasakis in Vrindavan and Shri Shri Radha Shama Sundar. It's non-different. That's Goloka Vrindavan right there. We have the deities. So this is one meditation, following what I just said, that there was a devotee named Gopal Guru Goswami. And he explains, he breaks down every holy name of the Maha Mantra. And the first ones I'm most inspired by, so I'll share them with you. It says, when we chant the first Hare, we should, with full attention and affection, have the prayer of, "O Shri Radha, please capture my heart and deliver me from the bondage of material life. Please capture my heart and deliver me from the bondage of material life." And the following Krishna means, "O Krishna, please pull my heart to you." Just by remembering, every name has a different meditation, but just by those two meditations, it can completely transform our lives. "Please capture my heart, release me from material bondage, and please pull my heart to you." So we have an opportunity every day, a special opportunity, not that we have to chant our rounds, but we get to chant our rounds. It's a privilege to be able to chant. Many people don't have that ability, you know, even physically due to karma. There's so many people that are deaf or paralyzed or so many things. So we should be grateful for everything that we have. So now that we have a human form of life that works properly, that we're able to speak, we're able to hear, we have an amazing opportunity to develop our original Krishna prema. We were on the pier the other day chanting Sankirtan, Harinam Sankirtan. I think it's on Saturday. We were on the pier. And there was one family from Asia somewhere, and they were fishing. I think it was the father who was fishing. and he caught a fish about like this big, and he was like really happy that he caught the fish. And I had a few realizations seeing that that have to do with what I'm talking about. One of them was actually, I was meditating on how it's like an alien abduction almost, you know. We're in a foreign place on a pier, you know, that's an unnatural place to be for a human being, to be floating 30 feet above the ocean water. And then this fish has never seen the outside land before, probably never in his life. He's just used to his natural habitat in the water with other fish. And he sees this worm, and he thinks he's going to have a good meal. And then he gets hooked, and all of a sudden he's brought out of his habitat, and he's floating 30 feet in the air. And then he's taken to this foreign land, this pier, where all these human creatures are walking around. And I was thinking how scary that must have been for the fish. And I was thinking, wow, what a poor fish, you know, that sucks. But then I was thinking, well, actually, all the fish in the ocean are going to have to die eventually. And this fish is actually very fortunate, because before he dies, he's hearing the Harinam Sankirtan party. So, and then I was also thinking how, in the same way, the previous acharyas are catching us one way or another, attracting our heart to Krishna. And at first, we may not know what we're getting ourselves into. But when we're hooked, you know, the spiritual master draws us in and brings us back to a foreign land to us now, but to our original nature. So the next one that he says, the meditation for Krishna, is to please purify my heart. And through your devotees, please give me knowledge of how to worship you. So, and I was reading Chaitanya Charitamrita last night, and Prabhupada was explaining in a purport how one should not remain in the neophyte platform. The Vaidhi rules and regulations are meant for the beginning, but one has to progress. It's not that we remain stagnant. Spiritual life is dynamic. We're supposed to blossom to our full potential, our full capacity. And Prabhupada says in this purport that I'm talking about, well, first of all, I'll read the translation. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that in the seed of affection, there is attachment which goes by two names, Vrati and Bhava. The Supreme Personality of Godhead comes under the control of such attachment. And then this is the purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur comments on this verse. Externally, a devotee performs all the items of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smadhanam, Padasevanam, etc., within his mind. But he always thinks of his eternal relationship with Krishna and follows in the footsteps of the devotees of Vrindavan. If one engages himself in the service of Radha and Krishna in this way, he can transcend the regulative principles enjoined in the Shastras. So this sentence right here really captured my attention. Because some devotees are of the opinion, I've never read this anywhere in Prabhupada's books actually, but I've heard this from devotees, that one has to wait until a very high stage of like bhava or prema to actually start cultivating at least a desire, what to speak of the mood of following the residents of Vrindavan. But Prabhupada says here that that's how we actually transcend the Vaidhi path. Is by practicing it. Raganuga Bhakti is very elevated, but it's also a practice. It's part of sadhana bhakti. So the way to actually transcend Vaidhi and come to this exalted stage of Raganuga is by engaging himself in the service of Radha and Krishna, by following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. And by this way, he transcends the regulative principles enjoined in the Shastras, and through his spiritual master, fully engages in rendering spontaneous love to Krishna. In this way, he attains affection at the lotus feet of Krishna, and Krishna actually comes under the control of such spontaneous feelings. So what we're doing here, this Vaidhi sadhana, it's not regular Vaidhi sadhana. It's aimed at Vraja Prema. You just analyze what we're singing in the morning. and the spiritual masters meditating on Radha Madhava, and that we're supposed to, what are we supposed to do? We're following in the footsteps of the spiritual master, are we not? Right? And Nikunja Yuno Ratikila Siddhye, you know, the spiritual masters in Goloka Vrindavan assisting the damsels of Raj in serving Shishi Radha Shamasundar. So eventually, we're that's our meditation every day, and we're supposed to come to that platform. The whole thing, the whole Vaidhi practice that Prabhupada has given us is supposed to bring us to the stage of Raja Prema. Just the Maha Mantra alone, we're chanting Hare Krishna, which is Radha Krishna. We're not chanting Lakshmi Narayan or Sita Ram. Those are bona fide names, of course, but we're given the specific Maha Mantra. It's Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. And Rama could be translated in many ways. One time, there was a discussion between devotees. They had a confusion whether Ram means Lord Ramachandra or Ram refers to Balaram. And they went to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, this argument is not meant for my advanced devotees. They're both, it's the same. Let whether Lord Ramachandra or Lord Balaram, according to your preference. But also, Rama, Krishna, or Prabhupada translates Rama into the source of all pleasure. So it's another name for Krishna in his original threefold bending form. So that's what we're giving to the world. We're following the footsteps of Prabhupada, who is directly coming from Vrindavan. And he's teaching that real Raja Prema or Raja Seva is actually selfless surrender. It's not doing what gives me pleasure, but it's doing what gives the spiritual master and Krishna pleasure, which automatically gives us the topmost pleasure than we can even imagine. And so Prabhupada has establish these dhams throughout the world. Like I was speaking earlier, Bhakti Tirtha Swami wanted to prove that these dhams are non-different from Goloka Vrindavan. And with this in mind, I would like to read one thing that I heard in a class by Mahanidhi Swami. He was explaining how Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he sent five or six sannyasis to preach in the West. You know, they went to England, I believe. And in his departure lecture, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur called his sannyasis living murdungas. Because he was explaining that even one of these preachers that goes and spreads the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is as good as a lakh of murdungas, and a lakh is 10,000. So it's good. 100,000. So that proves my point even more. That one preacher giving the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is as good as 100,000 murdungas. So I remember hearing also another class, Tamal Krishna Goswami was explaining. He actually pointed someone out in the class and he said, how many books are you distributing every day? And the person said, such and such number. And he said, how much Lakshmi are you collecting for the books? And he said, such and such number. And he said, okay, so you, let's say, for example, he said 50. I don't remember the exact number. So you contacted 50 people today and gave them Krishna in the form of a book, and you had them give a donation and render service in that way. How many new people came to the temple today? He said, maybe two or three. And how much Lakshmi did they make? So they said, this new bhakta here is as good as like 15 temples. He's a traveling tirtha. It's a traveling temple. And we're all meant to actually become traveling temples wherever we go and give this devotional service to others. One other thing I wanted to read, but I lost it. This is what happens when I don't prepare for class. I just try to scramble my mind to see what I can say, so I'm sorry. Anyways, I lost it. But there was one account, I heard this when I was on Navadvipa Parikrama. Bhakti Chaitanya Swami was giving a talk, and he was explaining on the same point how by engaging in service to the spiritual master and Shishi Gorani Tai, one develops the adhikar to dive deep into the service of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. And he was explaining that at the beginning of Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was having Sankirtan in the house of Srivas Thakur, this was before Nityananda Prabhu and Lord Chaitanya actually met. Nityananda Prabhu traveled throughout India, and he didn't preach at all. He was waiting till Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started the Sankirtan movement. And when Mahaprabhu started the Sankirtan movement in the house of Srivas, Nityananda Prabhu knew about it. And he gave this loud roar. It's explained in Chaitanya Bhagavat, he roared so loud that it vibrated throughout the whole universe. And Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, according to him, was saying that there's a historical account that 500 years ago throughout the world, people heard the roar. And you can actually, I guess you can read about it online, that there's accounts of people that they have no idea where this roar came from, but they didn't know that it was Nityananda Prabhu's roar. They roar like a lion. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in that song, he was explaining in the same thing, by engaging in the service of Gorani Tai, one gains entrance into Goloka Vrindavan Dham. And although Vidura, you know, attained his post in Prithaloka as a demigod, so in the same way, wherever Krishna wants us to serve, we're happy there. The Pandavas went, it says, it explains that the Pandavas went to Goloka Vrindavan, except for Arjuna always remains in the material world wherever Krishna goes. But the Pandavas went back to Goloka Vrindavan, which is, I had a question about that, but maybe I'll ask someone later. I was just wondering, because I heard that Goloka Vrindavan has three divisions. There's Navadweep, there's a Dwarka, and then there's a Vraj. So I was wondering if they actually entered Dwarka in Goloka Vrindavan. Maybe if someone has the answer, they can answer me later. But he was Prabhupada's explaining that by his pious activities and devotional service to the Lord, he was always able to remember Krishna. So piety actually has different translations. You know, there's the material piety, and then there's the spiritual piety one gains by engaging in devotional service. So what we're doing when we're out there on Sankirtan preaching is that we're giving people an opportunity to develop their pious bank account. It's a jatu sukriti. They have no idea what they're getting themselves into. They hear the holy names. They donate for a book. And Prabhupada explains, actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains, that in every town and village, the holy name will be heard. And Prabhupada also said the same thing. He confirmed this. And he said the whole world will eventually become Krishna conscious. And so what we may not see this happen in our lifetimes. We might not see this physically with our eyes, how the whole world can become Krishna conscious. But what we're doing now is extremely important. We had the pioneering days in the early 60s and 70s to establish ISKCON throughout the world. But this is still pioneering days. How many people are devotees in the world? So what we're doing now are pioneering days for future generations. How many people are going to come in contact with Prabhupada's books and the holy names and devotional service? And through this, though, it's a mass purification process. The world is becoming purified the more and more the Sankirtan mission goes on. And a conditioned soul who comes in contact with the Sankirtan movement, he gets a jatu sukriti, so in his next life, he becomes more favorable. And the next life, more favorable, as he continues to come in contact with the devotees, till eventually he's able to surrender fully. So all of us here, we're on a multi-life program. We have no idea what we were doing in our past lives to be where we are at now. And I remember hearing also that those that you could see who are fully surrendered, it's because of intense practice in previous lives or because of extreme mercy of the spiritual master and taking advantage of that mercy. All of us have the potential to become completely pure devotees. Everybody has the potential. To discriminate someone's material circumstance and just think that they're too fallen, that's actually a misconception. Lord Chaitanya has come to give prema bhakti to the most fallen. All we have to do is take advantage of it. It's like the sunlight. The sunlight is shining everywhere. It doesn't discriminate. But if we don't take advantage of the sunlight and we keep ourselves indoors, you know, we're going to become malnutritioned from the vitamins we need from the sun. But if you stay in the sunlight for too long, you might get burnt also. So it's, Prabhupada explains in one purport that with the spiritual master, one must be very careful. First of all, you must take advantage of his mercy, but to become too close might bring familiarity. So we have to understand what the spiritual master wants. Like in the memories videos yesterday we were listening to during breakfast, it was in London, at Bhaktivedanta Manor. Prabhupada was sitting alone on the grass with Shama Sundar Prabhu. And some devotees, they got back from Sankirtan or some service, and they saw Prabhupada sitting alone on the grass with Shama Sundar Prabhu, and they were thinking that it's a great opportunity to get association of Prabhupada. So they went and they sat down on the lawn, and Prabhupada just looked at them, and he seemed a little bit angry, actually. And the devotees were a little bit scared that Prabhupada seemed angry. Then he kind of, Prabhupada looked away, whispered something to Shama Sundar, looked back at the devotee as a little bit upset still, and then he said to Shama Sundar, what's wrong with these devotees? Do they don't have any engagement? They don't have anything to do? And in another place, Hridayananda Goswami got a group of devotees, and they were following Prabhupada to each temple, because Prabhupada was traveling in the U.S. preaching and giving classes at different temples. There were a group of devotees following him in a van. And then Prabhupada said, it's a nice gesture, but we're not supposed to enjoy the spiritual master. We're supposed to serve the spiritual master. So serving his instructions is more important than trying to be physically close, unless that's what he wants. That's all I could think of saying right now. It's 8:20. Does anybody have any questions? Or does anybody have the answer to my question? The question that I asked? Yes, Gauranga Prema Prabhu.
Thank you very much for the wonderful class, Prabhu. So, it looks like that Vidura, he was always remembering Krishna in his life. So, how could he only, you know, go back to Pichuroga at the end of his life? Can you explain a little bit more about this?
Yeah, I think the purport explained it, and I think I said something on it already, but I'll say it. Because the pure devotees are, they would like to go back to Godhead if Krishna wants, but mainly the pure devotees just want to be wherever Krishna wants them to be to continue their service. So Tripurari Swami back in the 70s told Prabhupada that some devotees, including myself, we don't want to go back to Godhead. We want to take birth after birth and distribute your books in the airports. And Prabhupada said, this is real devotion. You know, taking our desire of going back to Godhead out of the picture and wherever Krishna wants. So it seems like, you know, Vidura is a pure devotee and he's Yamaraj. So he has service to do in this world. And Yamaraj's service is very valuable. Because he's kicking people in the face until they're ready to surrender. So that's his service. So, does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank
yeah, Prem Sankirtan Prabhu. Yeah.
Where is this statement that Pandavas, they went to Goloka Vrindavan?
That was yesterday's class. It was yesterday or the day before. It's right here in the first canto, chapter 15. And text 48. This is but the Pandavas, okay, right here. I'll read it. This abode of Lord Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, cannot be attained by persons who are absorbed in the material conception of life, but the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attain that abode in their very same bodies. And then in the purport it says it again. Mother Karuna, Draini Mataji.
Thank you for a very nice class at the last moment. You mentioned that a spontaneous devotional service could take place within sadhana bhakti. So I was wondering, because I know there's so many stages of bhakti, you know, starting with sadhu sangha and bhajana kriya and those like that. So do you have to pass through any of those stages in order to get to Raghunuga Bhakti?
What's very interesting, in a book by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur called Rag Vartma Chandrika, he explains how, well, I also heard a seminar, Bhanu Swami translated that book, and Bhanu Swami explains in the seminar that the Vallabha Sampradaya doesn't have a Vaidhi practice. Just at the beginning of their practice is automatically Raghunuga Bhakti in the Vatsalya Rasa, in the parenthood. So he was explaining there, according to Bhanu Swami, so the Vallabha Sampradaya, just in the beginning, they're practicing Raghunuga and following the footsteps of Vrindavan and the Vrajavasis. But Prabhupada, my understanding, in the different purports of Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it seems like he's giving us this Vaidhi practice. We have to first purify ourselves, of course. So what stage it starts, I'm not exactly too sure. According to Bhanu Swami in that seminar, it can start right away. But of course, because we have... we're born in Malecha culture and things like that. To take up this practice of Raghunuga Bhakti artificially and prematurely is not going to do us good. But like I was explaining, how our Vaidhi practice is not regular Vaidhi practice. It's meant to awaken this desire, this strong desire to attain that same mood of the Vrajavasis. So... also, in another purport, Prabhupada explains, I can read it for you actually. I noted it down. This will only take a minute. I have it right here.
Thank you.
Yeah, one second. Okay, so he explains the. Prabhupada explains the path. This is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Sanatan Goswami, that okay, first you get Agyati Sukriti, then you want to associate with devotees, then Bhajana Kriya, you get initiation, you start following the regulative principles, you become purified from unwanted things, and Arjuna Vritti, one becomes firmly fixed, which is Nishta, you develop a taste, which is Ruchi, and then Prabhupada goes on to say, the more the taste grows, the more one desires to render service to the Lord. In this way, one becomes attached to a particular mellow in the Lord's service, Shanta Dasya Sakya Vatsalya or Madhurya, and as a result of such attachment, Bhava develops. So, in that specific purport, it seems that one naturally will desire or attain that stage before bhava, but in other places, Prabhupada makes it seem like just as one becomes more and more purified, his attachment to Krishna becomes more and more, and that attachment will spontaneously give an impetus to follow the residence.
I think in one of the chapters of Nectar Devotion, there's a series of examples of persons who rendered spontaneous service in spite of being beginners. I think there's examples like that. Yeah. But not that they were on that platform entirely, but that occurs because bhakti is so, you know, amazing.
It's according to each individual. Really, it's the lobha or the greed to attain Krishna prema. That's the actual key to attain this Raghunuga stage. It's your lolium and the greed. Like one example is Bilva Mangala Thakur, who was attracted to sex desire. but because of his intensity and his greed to attain Krishna Prema, that came, and now we have a famous book, Krishna Karanamrita, so, where he's actually seeing the activities of Goloka Vrindavan. So that's there also. Yes, Brigapachi Prabhu.
Along the same lines, Bharat Maharaj was on the platform of Baba, so that's certainly, ecstatic love for Krishna, spontaneous devotional service. But obviously, there was some anartha there, because that's otherwise he couldn't have fallen down. So it is possible before one is on a very, very high level to maybe, be engaged in spontaneous devotional service. And those are two things could be there simultaneously. A desire, to serve spontaneous, but anarthas can still be there.
The stages of bhakti that you mentioned, anartha navriti nishtha, it's not that one has to complete the stage of anartha navriti to go to ruchi. It's a spectrum. Madhurya Kundamani explains that the anartha navriti lasts all the way until bhava. You still can have anarthas and bhava. Of course, they're going to be less and they're going to be more subtle. But until someone attains Krishna prema, then he's completely free from anarthas. And Bharat Maharaj, not necessarily that he was following Raganuga Bhakti in the stage and following the residence of Raja, but one can also have bhava through the Vaidhi practice, but that leads one to Vaikuntha instead of Vrindavan. So you can still have bhava, but be inclined to worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. You can have prema, like the Vaikuntha Vasis. They have prema, but it's towards Lakshmi Narayan. So it's a different mood. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Slightly different point, but yeah, it makes sense.
Yes, Mataji.
Well, according to the Madhurya Kadambini and also the Rav Varma Chandrika, you can have the mood of following the inhabitants of Vrindavan at any stage when that loba appears. And that is not necessarily happening at only one stage. It could be, as you said, it's a whole spectrum of things. It's not that all of a sudden you have it. It's something that comes very little, at little stages, little bit of this, little bit of that. It's not black and white that you go by the stages. Because you can be inspired by loba at any point. And it's not necessarily that you have to finish fully, like you said, quoting this, every stage. You know, you are getting little bit of this, little bit of that. And when loba appears, according to the acharyas, to Vishwanath Chakravarti, and when loba appears, then loba is the guide to go through the stages. And then you complete, like in the Madhurya Kadambini, is explained by Vishwanath, that you have different levels of purification. And so at the beginning, there's a certain amount of purification that you have gotten, and then the next stage is more complete, and it's more complete. And whenever it is complete, then you attain bhava. But you have you're going through the stages, and you have a little bit of that, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, every stage. And when you finally, your lova is so intense, it may descend at that time. It's something that descends from the parikars of Krishna. You are given the mercy by Guru's mercy, by Vaishnava's mercy, then it descends to you. But there's not a particular stage that it may come. Raganuga Bhakti is sadhana bhakti. It's not to be have after bhava. After bhava, you go to prema. And when you are in prema, then you are already in the other side. When prema descends, then there's no more material body that can maintain. With prema, it's so intense that the body is diminished, it's finished. So bhava you can attain in this body and then practice more deeply. But the problem is that people think that bhava is something that you, that Praganuga Bhakti is something that you attain when you are at the last stage, like prema. But it's something for this world. You can't start. Normally people attained it by the mercy of guru and by their practices at the moment of death. But there's people that attained it before. And what I've heard from the acharyas is that the devotees, when they finally have that lobha, then they can practice Raganuga Bhakti. It's a practice that happens. It's just an extension of Vaidhi Bhakti. It's Vaidhi Bhakti turns into Raganuga, and what they say is that all of a sudden they realize that they were always practicing that, like you've said. Prabhupada has given us the way of doing it by following from Sraddha to Prema and to Bhava at this point. We're talking about Raganuga Bhakti. Raganuga Bhakti is to be practiced in the world. It's not something that you practice in the other world. In the other world, you start from Prema on, and then you go to the higher stages. So it's not something that people have to be afraid, oh, I am practicing Raganuga Bhakti. This is, you know, it's nothing like that. It's just an extension of Vaidhi Bhakti, just a more developed thing, and then the rules are naturally followed. You don't need to try to follow the rules. You naturally follow the rules, and then you have a little bit of taste for that, and that is what carries you to the next stage, and then finally prema descends at a certain point. But it's and people are afraid. They think Raganuga Bhakti is Ragatmika Bhakti. There's a confusion. Raganuga Bhakti is for this world, and it's just a practice. Ragatmika Bhakti is when when you are in the other world, and that you have full raga for Krishna. You don't attain this here. You just, when you attain prema, you begin that. And when you attain prema, you don't have, your body dies, can't withhold prema. And so after that, then you Ragatmika Bhakti, which is the highest stage. Raganuga Bhakti is a practice.
Can I say one thing?
Yes.
Like rag atmaka, rag means like your love, your rasa, your relationship you have with Krishna. Atmaka means that soul inherent, that rasa, that rag is inherent within the atma, the atmaka. So yeah, the residents of Vrindavan,
right,
they have rag atmaka bhakti. That's their natural position. Rag anuga means to follow. So we're following those devotees that already have that raga. Does that make sense?
I think that's correct, because if I'm remembering correctly, in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada talks about, he says, Vaidhi Bhakti is when you're performing devotional service on the order of the spiritual master. But then he says, after some time, one might, you know, develop a liking for doing it, and that's called spontaneous, or that's Raganuga Bhakti, so that's at an early stage. You see, so I think that's...
When that greed comes, when that lobha comes, that means that you have attained the ruchi, the taste for it, in an intensified way. So you can naturally, you are absorbing Krishna, you're doing your services with the mood of devotion and at a very high intensity, and you're still in the material world. Your body doesn't die with lobha, with greed, in whatever relationship that they may have with Krishna. It happens to the, like you were quoting, that the Banu Swami says that this Balava Sampradaya, they have this at the beginning for Vatsalya Ras. And there are Ragmark people like we are. you know, but in Vatsalya is their specialty. And they have some, I have seen these people doing their practices, and they have, their deity worship is like fabulous and very elaborated, very pure, and they have an intense love to do what they're doing, and it's just normal practices like we do. And in the Gaudiya line, what the acharyas say is that it's already in the platform of love. It's only that we're awakening to it, and when we get to the point of bhava clearly, we realize that we were all the time practicing this. We just didn't know. We were just waking up to it. Bhavita Manti.
You know it. No, but it's translated in English. In that verse, it's explained that the word pure devotional service can be attained only in pious activities in millions and millions of years. But one has to have that lolyam, loba, intense. So that's the, you know, the whole point about the discussion.
And that can happen at whatever stage it may be. It's not, it's like you said, it's something that descends in little stages, little ruchi, little asakti, little this, something attained is fully attained. Vishwanath explains that. When there's complete purification, then you are at the highest level, then you attain bhava. And then after bhava, you do some little practice, if you are still in this world. Your practice is actual practice, it's actual devotion at that time. Actual, because you're totally absorbed. And then when you come to the intense point that prema descends, that's something that descends. It's not something that anybody can emulate or push or anything. It's something that is given. Then the devotee dies and then goes to the place where Krishna is doing his pastimes in the material world to be trained in the higher levels of prema. And that's explained by the acharyas, and Prabhupada has set up everything perfectly well, so this will develop. And it's a natural practice, it's a natural thing. Nothing strange is there. You people that think I am this, I am that, this is not the Ragmar practice. It's just a natural, spontaneous attachment to service to Krishna. Like our practices, it's the same practices. There's no difference. The only difference is the mood. So if we continue doing our services and practicing in this way, it will naturally appear. And that doesn't mean that you are in the level of the people in Goloka Vrindavan or anything like that. It means that you are a practicing devotee that has developed a taste. And that's a natural thing. So we should always remember that and not start, you know, there's the sahajas that they imitate all these things, and you can see that they're not actually having that in a natural way, because it's just practices that we do, like we do. You continue, you don't, I have seen them in India, they dress like ladies, for example, and, you know, trying to emulate the gopis, and that, we don't do any of these things. This is artificial. This is improper. You know, so we just continue with our services, and when the intensity of love comes, we will just love to do our service even more, and then we'll develop our individual taste clearly. And that's all we need to do. We don't need to just speculate or try to do it before, ahead of time. No, it's just the same practices that we do, just with intense taste and focus. And that's how we understand it. And what we're doing is perfect. We just have to be attentive, like you said. Avoid offenses and all these things. So, and no need to be afraid of something like this. It's just a natural thing.
Thank you.
Thank you for your class, Prabhu. Very nice.
Hare Krishna.
And you didn't even prepare.
Hare Krishna. Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.